It's the CougarFan.com Rising Shot Podcast, episode 242. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Oddly enough, Matt and I start off this episode talking about the movie Jason Bourne and why it's awesome. We also discuss Jimmer, fall camp news, and we preview the BYU defense. We finish with Big 12 expansion news and a discussion about why the Olympics are so awesome. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shot Podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Join the conversation with us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And listen to us right now. CougarFan.com Rise and Shot Podcast. Matt, are you watching the Olympics right now? Did you just open a... Whoa, that's my gig. You're not... Whoa. I'm editing this out. You're not allowed to do this on the show.
Oh, that's really exciting.
You know what's even worse? Refreshing. You know what's worse? Because I can't...
This is going to be refreshing.
I can't respond because I opened mine up. I didn't have enough self-control to wait tonight. So mine's already open.
Oh, I've wanted to do that for like 100 episodes.
What took you so long? Poor planning?
I could never wait.
Ah.
So but I'm actually drinking less Diet Mountain Dew now than I used to. I've trimmed it back a little bit.
Good for you.
So the headaches are just unbearable, but I'll get there.
Good for you. yeah, I've stopped Dr. Pepper a couple times.
Whoa. I didn't say I was stopping it altogether. I was trimming it back. Yeah, I don't need to drink five in a day anymore.
That's
over the top.
I was talking to my in-laws are in town with the new baby having been born last week. That's why we didn't record last week. I realized last week was kind of a big news week.
A little bit. There was some stuff going on. You might not have noticed since you weren't sleeping much or whatever with the baby.
Yeah. Well, I noticed it all. I had time. I mean, you know, in the middle of the night. But I was talking with my in-laws, and my father-in-law has stopped drinking Coke. And I said, now I only drink Dr. Pepper if I'm at a restaurant or someplace and they don't have it available. I just don't get a soda. I just drink water. And they're like, and my wife and they're like, oh, that's good for you. I'm like, yeah, I'm a regular health nut. You know, that's
right.
I mean, I won't drink that Coke or Pepsi stuff, but if they have Dr. Pepper, I'll drink four of them. So Matt, we have not had a chance to talk about this. I saw this movie the weekend before my son was born. See what I did there? I'm speaking of Jason Bourne. So Matt, Zero to Detmer. How good was that movie?
Detmer.
Really?
Oh yeah. Detmer. Heisman Trophy ceremony, Detmer.
Wow. I had it more like Steve Young.
Listen, it's a Bourne movie. I can't control myself.
Okay. So I'll ask the question in a different way. And we're going to put the Jeremy Renner movie to the side, though I actually like that movie. It's not as good as the others, but...
But it was good. I liked it.
I enjoyed that movie. I don't know why everyone hates it, but put that aside.
Because the haters going to hate.
Haters are going to hate. Four Jason Bourne movies starring Matt Damon, who basically is Jason Bourne, right?
It's autobiographical. You know that, right?
Yes. Where does this fit as far as ranking, if you had to rank them? Force rank the four Bourne movies.
And Bourne Supremacy, I think, is my favorite one.
Yeah, Bourne Supremacy is good, isn't it?
Then probably Bourne Identity.
Then Bourne Ultimatum, or would you go Jason Bourne?
It's close to me at that point. Jason Bourne, Bourne Ultimatum.
So this is how I judge these movies, Matt. I judge these movies by I get done and I've got that totally stoked feeling in my gut. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Like you're just revved up and you're ready to go like be a spy.
Yes.
All four of those movies hit that for me. Okay, so none of them missed, right? I watched all four of them in less than 7 days. I think it was 6 days. Maybe it was seven. So I had them all in my head. I would put Jason Bourne fourth. I really enjoyed Bourne Ultimatum, which I've only seen twice. This was my third time to see it. I've seen the original one. I don't even know how many times. In Bourne Supremacy, I've seen five or six times now. But I'd have to say it goes last. For me, it goes Bourne Identity 1, Supremacy, Ultimatum, in the order that they happen to come out. But man, I remember finishing Supremacy going, wow, that movie is really freaking good. Like, this was a sequel with no drop-off, you know? And some of the effects and action sequences were better because they had a little bit more money to play with.
Yep.
But I'll tell you what, and spoilers ahead, kind of, not really, but if you're super worried about that kind of stuff, I'd skip ahead a little bit. Some of those fight sequences in Jason Bourne were off the freaking hook.
Oh, they were awesome.
I mean, I know the car chase was more ridiculous than they usually get in Jason Bourne at the end, but I'd say that was pretty good. And I'm also like, this is where the big spoiler warning is, Matt. When they killed the person that they killed early on, I was totally cool with that.
You almost expected it.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say anything else.
Yeah. But anyway, so definitely go out and see it if you're a fan of those films, for sure. Matt, we're going to open here with a tweetbag question.
Tweetbag.
This is Justin Whiting at JN Whiting on Twitter. Asks us, and of course you can tweet at us at BYU_RiseShout. Please draft best and worst Olympic events. Matt, I've watched a ton of Olympics. I spent today working from home, I'm doing air quotes, and I may or may not have watched 4 hours of rugby sevens.
Oh my gosh.
I may or may not have. I can't confirm nor deny that. We will do this next week. We will talk about the Olympics next week. We've got a packed show, jam-packed, as they say in the biz.
Wow, in the biz, huh?
In the biz, they say that, yes. Well, we're in the biz. We've been doing this for like 5 years, man.
Okay.
We're in the biz. Are we in the biz?
I guess.
You say we're in the biz?
I guess.
I would say we're in the biz. Well, Matt, I want to start off with something that that I think will be a cool story, and unfortunately probably won't be a guest on our show anymore. And this is not on the agenda, so I'm throwing you a curveball. BYU Athletics announced today that Greg Rebel has been hired as the Director of Broadcast Media. And Greg is a frequent guest of the podcast. He actually has been on our podcast 23 times in 242 now episodes. So you can do the math. He is our most frequent guest out there. So he may be able to still be on the podcast. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if his new role makes him up. But congratulations to Greg. Couldn't happen to a better guy. He gave us a lot of time early on in the podcast, came on when there were only dozens of people listening. So congratulations to Greg and good luck in his new role.
And you know what? I've always loved his haircut.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
The man knows how to cut his hair.
He does. He definitely does know how to cut his hair. You guys go to the same barber, apparently.
No, I don't think we do because I've never cut his hair before.
So Matt, also, by the way, we are brought to you this week once again by my book, Peak Crosser. You can get that on Amazon or other ebook platforms. Matt, it's getting good reviews. It's a fantastic book. So go check it out on Amazon.com and other fine e-retailers. So Matt, let's go straight to Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So we're starting with our Cougars in the Pros segment, and I will skip the Roger Goodell poor imitation this week. Jimmer signs with the Shanghai Sharks. Matt, is this the end of Jimmer in the NBA?
So I don't speak Chinese. I don't know how Shanghai is actually pronounced.
I do not know that either. I'm sure.
And I don't.
Not the
and
way
I don't
I
know what the word shark is. But I'm very curious as to whether or not this alliteration crosses over. Or if they're just, if it's just an English language play. It has nothing to do with Jimmer Fredette, but it's, anyway, I've been curious about, not curious enough to like Google it or look it up.
So what you're saying is not really curious? Because it would take you like
mildly curious. It's probably the right description. Mildly curious.
So is this the end of Jimmer in the NBA?
I guess
it's a 1-year deal.
Unless you thought we had already passed the end of Jimmer in the NBA.
I mean, he played.
But I'm not trying to be mean about it, but
I think this is the end, and in some ways, this may be the better way for him to round out his career. You know, play in Europe and or China. He'll make some decent money and could have some success and actually get to play. You know, so I don't know.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, right? The idea is you got to go and make the money while you can.
Yeah. And obviously, his rookie contract, he made plenty of money as a lottery pick. So, well, Matt, we are now done talking. Well, we're going to talk some expansion stuff here at the end. We kind of have to, don't we? Don't we have to talk about expansion if you're going to be talking about this?
I think it's obligatory, isn't it?
It is obligatory. So we'll get to that in a second. But we're going to first talk about some fall camp football camp storylines, Matt. The one that is not new, it's a little old, but everything, a lot we're going to talk about today is old, but still worth talking about. Matt, there were several people that were not on the roster that were expected to be. Right out of the tweet bag, Will asked us, that's at WMR0789. Is that his birth month and year?
I don't know. I would certainly hope you're not throwing out that type of information on the internet.
Sorry, Will. Did I
just... WMR, July of
1989. Which current roster absentee concerns you the most?
That's actually a tough one. I don't even know. Concerns me the most. I mean, they all kind of concern me. Just especially, you know, when you don't really know what's going on or what the odds are that one of these guys is going to come back. But I do feel like the Wilcox is pretty conspicuous.
Yeah. Wilcox is the one to me, and I don't think it's really that close. He's a starter. He was expected to play a big part on that offensive line. He's experienced. He's good. And so far, unless there was something in the news today that I missed, there hasn't been a really good indication of why he's not with the team or why, when and if he'll be back.
Yeah, what's been interesting about the way they've played that is they've asked, you know, assistant coaches, and they say, well, you got to talk to Coach Satake about it.
Yeah.
And the Coach Satake's response is, I really don't think it's useful for us to talk about the individual players' problems and issues. It's a variety of things that are going on with a variety of guys, and we don't need to get into everybody's individual business. I like that.
For those that thought this coaching staff would be more open than the previous one, they may be more friendly and more media savvy. They are not more open.
No.
And quite frankly, nor should they be. I always find it kind of ridiculous when people are like, well, why don't the coaches just tell us everything? Really? Really? You want the coaches to tell us everything? You know the opponents can read this stuff too, right?
You don't actually want the coaches to tell you everything.
No. And in this case...
You think you do, but you don't.
In this case, we're also there's potential privacy stuff too, right? So I didn't expect the coaches, but I am surprised I haven't read any like sources say kind of articles about it. Matt, another good story that is coming at camp that I was from friend of the podcast, Jay Drew, interviewing Mike Lamb, who's doing the Ed Lamb. I'm sorry. Why did I say Mike? Ed Lamb. He's
like,
the former.
It's like you're new.
It's like I'm new. This is my first podcast. Southern Utah head coach, now doing special teams and defensive back. So, Matt, as I read some of his quotes, we'll get to the safeties here in a bit. How concerned are you about the special teams?
It's all relative, right? But I think that special teams is a critical component of the game that is easily overlooked, and in some ways has been overlooked in the past.
Yeah.
So I like Satake's approach here, where he wants to spend some time in the special teams. I think taking a guy who's got some head coaching experience and that you're bringing in for those types of reasons and putting him over the special team sends a signal. You know, games can be lost with special teams.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's a lot. I think it's more difficult to win a game on special teams, but it's really easy to lose a game.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is. And I don't know if I'm worried about special teams as a whole. I'm worried about the kickers just because it doesn't seem like they know yet exactly who it is, which to me means nobody's separating themselves, right? So right. That worries me. I think the punting game will be fine. The return game, to me, is always an issue because it just seems like the last several years we've struggled to get a consistent return game on kickoffs or punts. There's been some glimpses here and there. Matt, another Salt Lake Tribune story that was interesting this week was basically about the tight ends. This is also from J. Drew. Came out yesterday. Yes, they want to use more tight ends, Matt, but who the heck are they going to use?
Well, see, the thing is they don't really have one, right?
Yeah, well, they don't have somebody that's proven themselves at this level, no.
Right.
For sure.
You know, and you've got a guy coaching the tight ends who's like my height, by the way. Just looking at this picture that shows up in this article, he just looks so little. It's like the picture of the men's volleyball player next to Simone Biles. It's
like, yeah.
It's like he just looks so little.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that there's been such a, I don't even know what the word is, right? It's felt like such a big hole in personnel at the tight end spot for so long that you don't have a guy coming in who's the clear front runner for the job, and because it's been so long, we kind of have ideas about what this offense is going to look like, but you don't really know what they're going to use him for. It's almost like we've forgotten what tight ends do, right?
What is this tight end position they're talking about?
Yeah, what is this? Is he a receiver? Is he a lineman?
Does he block? What does he do?
I don't understand. I'm just a simple caveman. But anyway, I don't even remember what your original question was.
Well, so let's look. We'll get back to this in another podcast. But just briefly, I mean, you got a couple of candidates that were on last year's roster. You've got a guy like a Solomon Wolfgram, which, by the way, that is a fantastic name.
Yeah, he should start just for that.
He played basketball at BYU Hawaii and got back off a church mission. And he's super athletic, 6'6", 270. So he's kind of in that, that big athletic former basketball playing group of tight ends, which doesn't necessarily mean he'll be any good, but there's something there. And you got Sampson and a few other of these folks. But I do like what Ty Detmer said in the article, or maybe it was Kalani Sitake, it was Ty Detmer in a different article I read, said that they will not, they're not going to throw out two tight ends if they don't have two tight ends that can play. So, Ty Detmer said, if we have to do a bunch of three wide receiver stuff, we'll do it because we'll put the best 11 guys that give us the best chance to win. So that I like.
And that's the way it should be done.
Yeah, let's not force this because, well, we want to use a tight end. And again, I hope one or two or three of these guys emerge and, in game four, you and I are just kind of laughing about how we were worried about whether there'd be some good tight ends or not.
Right.
Okay, Matt, next on there, Jay Yeomans, a friend of the podcast that's been on, he in the Deseret News ranks all the top 30 NCAA quarterbacks. He puts Tanner 14th and Taysom 10th.
Of course he does.
Now that may be a little home cooking, Jay.
Just a touch.
I looked at the list. I think he's got him in pretty good spots. Tanner might slip a couple to me. Taysom, if he's healthy, I think he's a top 10 guy. And he had him as 10th, so I didn't have any issues with that. Matt, according to his rankings and some national writers that I've seen, people think we have the best quarterback tandem in the country. Do you believe that's true?
Oh, quarterback tandem? Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've got two guys that could start at a lot of programs.
Yes. Two
and
guys that could
a very
start.
Rare situation to be in.
Yeah, they're both Power 5 conference quarterbacks, right? I mean, easy. They were both recruited by P5 schools and would be starting and or competing to start at a lot of almost any school in the country. They'd be at least competing.
Yep. They'd compete against a lot of the guys on this list.
Oh heck yeah. And I looked at the list. We will see a couple of those guys, including Rosen's, of course, this season, Matt. But it's
crazy.
It's a good thing to have. Well, that with the quarterback, battle. The coaches have been pretty. have been pretty clear that this is a battle, okay? That the quotes seem to indicate that. So I tweeted out a few days ago, Matt, from our Rise and Shout podcast account, how shocked would you be if Tanner was named the starter and Taysom a selfie? I gave three options, super shocked, shocked but only a bit, and the last one, not at all shocked. Matt, which group would you be in if a healthy Taysom ends up not being the starter come that game against Arizona?
Oh, I'd be super shocked to beyond super shocked.
So, you say that, okay? That was 38% of the people. I'm in that camp. 45% said they'd be shocked, but only a bit. And then 17% said they wouldn't be shocked at all. Matt, I thought the, even though it's weighted heavily towards shocked, I thought it would be even heavier. I would have expected it to be heavier,
but I think a lot of these guys in the 17% are really saying that they I don't know that anybody's saying, oh, well, Tanner's clearly the better choice. I think the consensus is likely, listen, this is a really close race, and it could go either way, and I wouldn't be surprised either way.
Right, right. I think some group in that, sure, there may be a few saying Tanner's better, he should win it, right?
Right, but like Tanner's mom, you know, Tanner's cousin.
Okay, all right, right, right. There might be a few other people that believe that, but
I'm just kidding.
A couple of them, I think, listen to this podcast. But anyway, it's fascinating to me. I thought they would have already named, if they were going to name a starter, I thought they might already have named Tanner and been done with it. But it is clear they, at least publicly, are going to say this is a competition. And I will still be very shocked if Taysom is not the starter and he's healthy. But, you know, it's a new coaching staff. They didn't recruit either of these guys. They never made either of these guys any promises. So they can start whoever they want. Right? I mean, the old staff could too, but, you know, and assuming they didn't promise Taysom anything for coming back, which I think it's clear, at least publicly, they did not promise him anything.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and I think if you're this coaching staff, it really behooves you to let these guys battle it out so you can kind of see for yourself. You know, Tanner had a whole season there and a whole off season to get ready. You don't know how healthy Taysom is. You've got to give yourself a chance to evaluate him against one another. I think before you name a starter, you've got to see him in like a real live action scrimmage or something.
I completely agree with you. I think it's the smart thing to do as the coaching staff. Don't get yourself caught in a trap where you say, yeah, you should. It's definitely Taysom, and then you start watching them and go, oh, whoa, that's not exactly what I had in mind, you know.
Right.
Health-wise, for certain, being the biggest issue. So, Matt, we're going to preview the BYU defense as part of our ongoing. Now, this is our first preview podcast. We will next week be previewing the running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. In a couple weeks, we'll be previewing the QBs, the O-line, and special teams. And then, of course, the next podcast after that, we'll be previewing the Arizona game.
Oh!
Yeah! Yeah, buddy! So, it's getting close. It's getting close. Okay, so Matt, we're going to talk about some position battles on the defense, and then we'll pull away and talk about some overall stuff. All right?
All right.
That's how this is going to work. So, position battles. For a linebacker, we know Warner's going to be a starter and probably playing a ton. Longy is going to be a starter, though we'll get to some of what they've been doing with him in camp here in a minute. Who is it after that?
Yeah, you know, I
don't know. I don't know. Bernard?
You look at the options. They've said a lot of good things about Bernard. I think he's got just as good a choice as anybody. I think Bernard is really good. He could be the next guy. I mean, you look at this list, I think I've seen enough of him. I've seen more of him than anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Which makes, you know, so I feel like, and it's not playing linebacker obviously, but I think I've seen enough to understand his athleticism and his football ability.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you've got Tapu Soa, Paul Unga. You've got, Taki Taki, who has been playing both D-line and linebacker, according to reports. Okay. He's listed as a linebacker, but they've had him with his hands down on the ground. So is Taki Taki a defensive lineman? He's certainly potentially the best pass rusher from the outside the team might have. Showed a lot of that skill. I just think the linebacker position after Warner and Lange is wide open at this point.
Yeah, I think it's probably that's probably true.
And they'll probably rotate guys around. There was a report a couple days ago of Longy lining up on the end, rushing the passer. Do you think we'll see that, or do you think they were just kind of evaluating and doing some different things, or do you think we'll see in this new defensive scheme them moving moving guys around?
I don't think they're going to move guys around a lot. I think they're going to test the waters a little bit here in fall camp, maybe give some guys some look in practice.
But right.
I didn't get the impression, based on Satake's comments about the jack of all trades, master of none, that we're going to see people rotating around like that.
Yeah, I think I think you'll see it in some cases with pass rushing on pass rushing downs, right?
Well, yeah, if you're running out of a 3-4, you could take one of those outside linebackers, bring him up to the line of scrimmage and have him put his hand in the dirt.
Yeah, yeah. I think, on certain downs you might see it, but I don't think you're going to see – I mean, I always think about how Urlacher was used at New Mexico, where he played all over the field, right?
Right.
And I think if you have a transcendent talent like him, you can do that. I think it's better for most players to get – to learn their position and stay in their position. I just think you end up – as we saw with Kafusi when the year that he got switched to linebacker, I just think, moving guys around a bunch sometimes can backfire on you pretty fast. So I don't think you'll see long. Again, on clear pass rushing downs, he's a guy with speed and size that could, get to the edge and create some havoc. So we'll see. At cornerback, Matt, definitely some position battles going here. It looks like Hanneman, who played a lot of cornerback last year, is now in the safety position. We'll get to that here in a second. Michael Davis, by the way, I think one of the most underrated BYU defensive players ever. And then?
I think it's Troy Warner.
Yeah, aren't you getting that feeling from the quotes that Warner could be the guy that starts in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, if I were listening out right now, I'd feel a lot more confident saying Troy Warner than I did saying Francis Bernard to our linebacker discussion.
Yeah.
I think he's the guy.
Yeah, yeah. Or
and if they weren't
Davis?
Comfortable, me, yeah, I think he gets in the mix. But I think Troy Warner is probably the front runner, and for that spot. And if they weren't comfortable with him, I don't think you move Hanneman.
No. I think
so clearly they're at least comfortable enough with Troy Warner or the combination of him and a couple of these other guys to move Hanneman. That seems like a signal to me, like they feel like they have a guy.
So Warner, Davis, Shelton, Lake, all those guys are going to play, right? Because you'll have nickel and dime packages as well as injuries and rotations, right? I think, though, at the end of the year, I believe you're correct. Davis is going to be the lockdown guy, who hopefully in this new regime they will put him on the best wide receiver on the other team. And I think Warner's the other guy. That's what I think it's going to be. And Warner, it's going to be a brother's thing with he and his brother Fred, right? I mean, that's kind of cool. I mean, it's not the first time that's happened at BYU or any college. It's not that uncommon, but it's awesome.
It's still cool.
It's awesome. So, Matt, speaking of the guys that put their hands on the ground, Travis Tuiloma obviously is a force there in the middle and one of the best players on the team, I would say, right? If we were – we've done that game before and talked about who the best players are. After that, who you got?
I got Handsome.
Got Handsome. Well, I mean, I will tell you this much. If we have a guy – Handsome playing, and then we also have Wolfgram. You know what I mean? Like, these are awesome names.
Yeah, it's almost like, is this a movie? Did somebody make these names up?
So I question also if Taki Taki, where he'll be. He's listed as a linebacker, but he's reports at a camp are that he is playing with his hand down on the ground sometimes. Lauli, as well as a few others. Matt, I think it's wide open. I think we're going to see guys we haven't seen either changing positions or just in general, because now you're starting four guys in that position.
Is Taki Taki playing right now? I thought he was.
You're right. You're right. He's AWOL. He is AWOL too. You're right. You're right. I was thinking of reports before camp where they talked about where he might play. But you're right. He's one of those guys that's not on the roster. Is that as big of a deal as Wilcox? I don't think it is. I think it's a big deal. It's not your starting left tackle.
Right. It's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing. And I think they've got guys to replace him wherever he would have been playing, linebacker or D-line. I think they're deep enough. I do worry about depth on the D-line, Matt. Do you worry about that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, now you're asking for four spots instead of three. They've been recruiting for the 3-4 over the past, you know, decade almost. And I do worry about that in the short term, especially in that first month and a half with kind of a brutal schedule playing against some very good offensive lines. I mean, I don't worry about Tuiloma, but I worry about depth. We haven't mentioned the Kafusi brother. Matt, you think he plays at all this year?
I don't know. You don't hear his name batted around very much.
No, I haven't. I haven't heard it at all. So, which means either he's not really doing much, or he's. I mean, I don't know. He's the same problem a lot of guys have had as tall as him in football. It's really easy to get his legs, right? There's a reason that there aren't a bunch of 6'10" defensive linemen out there. You know, it's not common. Now, obviously, he's a freakishly good athlete. So I wouldn't say never, but I'm kind of hoping he continues to focus on basketball. but you know, we shall see. So Matt, the defensive position we haven't talked about is where there, I don't believe, is a position battle. Do you agree with me?
You're talking about at safety?
Safety.
Yeah, I think we know. I think we know.
It's Nacua and Hanneman, right?
Right.
So, was moving Hanneman to safety the right call? I mean, he showed flashes of brilliance at cornerback last year, and also flashes of, what did you just do? You know, as a freshman. So what do you? Was this the right thing? Is he better fit as a safety?
I think he is better fit as a safety, but I only feel good about that move if you like Warner at corner. If you're really comfortable with Warner at corner, then yeah, I think you move Hanneman, and I think safety is probably a better spot for him than corner.
I think he will be a better safety than he was a cornerback. I think he could have been an above average Division I cornerback, right? So I'm not dissing him. He had some very athletic interceptions. Of course, one of them that I'm thinking of. That's because he was out of position. So, you know, there's the good and the bad. But I think his size and speed will. I mean, are Nacua and Hanneman, is that the most athletic safety combo we've ever had?
That's pretty good.
I mean, I'm not saying either of them are the best safeties we've ever had. I'm not even saying they're the most necessarily even the best combo yet. They got to prove that. I mean, obviously, Nacua has got several years behind him in that position. Hanneman has none, so we'll see. But they can both fly.
They're both extremely talented, both very athletic, fast.
Hanneman might be, you know, third or fourth fastest dude on the team. You know, who do you think wins that this camp this year? I'm hearing the one report I've heard is that right now Michael Davis, nobody's been able to beat him.
I think he keeps the title.
I think he keeps the title, you know. But remember, a healthy Taysom runs pretty fast.
I don't know. Do you think he's Michael Davis fast?
I don't know that he's Michael Davis fast, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do that. Which, by the way, they really, the coaching staffs do not like them racing against each other. It's a good way for somebody to pull something. But
yeah, it's really funny. My son's football team. They just started practice up last week and this week.
Of course they did.
And then the two fastest kids, you know, these are 11-year-olds. But the two fastest kids, the coach has said this year he's not going to allow them to race against each other, run against each other, and practice all year.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's worried that it becomes too competitive and one of them is going to pull a hammy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's kind of how it goes down, right? I just wouldn't be surprised if they did do a 100-meter race or a 50-meter, whatever, pick your sprinting distance. I wouldn't be surprised if Taysom is second.
No, it wouldn't shock me.
So somebody at work asked me who they thought, this is a big college football fan, asked me who I thought would be the starting quarterback for BYU. Okay. And so I pulled up an article I went to the BYU website. That's where I was, and was showing them some stats. And me and this guy were talking, and this other guy walks by who is a college football fan, but not as big as the two of us, and he looks at it and goes, "Man, that is one of the fiercest looking linebackers I've ever seen." It was just him signing some autographs or something with his shirt on. I'm like, "That's the quarterback." And he's like, "No way, that's not a quarterback." I'm like, "No, he's a quarterback. He just looks like a linebacker. He's actually a quarterback." So Matt, let's stick to the defense here. We're gonna do a little game of better or worse. All right, so we're going to talk about four different areas of the defense, and you're going to tell me if they are better or going to be better or worse than last season's defense.
Okay.
And then I'm going to tell you why you're wrong. Get how this works?
Yeah, I get how it works. We've traveled this road before.
Yes, yes.
I say something, you tell me I'm stupid. Yeah, I get it.
I don't usually use the word stupid.
Moron is kind of the same word, but...
We'll have to look that up, see if they are truly synonyms. So, Matt, rush defense. Last year, BYU gave up 4.46 yards per carry, and that is with sacks factored out. Matt, will the defense this year better that number or be worse than that number?
I think they'll be better.
You think they will be better? Well, why, Matt? Why do you think they'll be better?
You got a couple key guys returning. And I love the change in scheme, and I think you do some things there that will allow you to take the run game away a little bit, given the personnel that they already have in the cupboard.
Well, you know, you look at the last several years, you know, that is the rush defense has been a strength, right? The last several years, but last year was kind of a step backwards for the defense. And one of the worst defenses in yards per carry that Bronco has ever had. I think they will get better. The scheme, I think good returning players. I think the linebackers are more experienced. So yes, I agree with you. You are not actually wrong on this one. I think they will be better.
Oh, look at that.
So Matt, the next number is pass defense. Last year, BYU gave up 5.38 yards per pass play. That does include sacks and incomplete passes. Matt, will they be better or worse than that number?
I think they're going to be slightly worse here. And
whoa.
Some of that is a function of the improved rushing defense. I think teams are going to be into longer passing downs than they have been, at least than they were last year. And, you know, having to run plays to get them to the sticks from a slightly longer distance. So I think that's a piece of it. But I think teams are also going to pass more, and the more teams pass, I think that just by average, I think eventually something there's got to give.
Yeah, yeah. I think they will be worse as well. I think there's two big factors to me. Is I think that we will not get as much pressure on the quarterback this year. Last year we had 8.7% of pass plays ended up as in a sack. I don't think we'll approach that number. I don't think without Kafusi there, I don't know if there's a single pass rusher we have right now that you have to double team. I might be proven wrong, but that opens up other opportunities for other players in the pass game. I also think that the defensive backfield played pretty well last year, and I think they will play well again. I don't know if they'll play as well. And we also play some teams that are going to throw the ball. And I just think, you know, statistically, I don't know that we'll match that. But I wouldn't be shocked if we did. I wouldn't be shocked. Matt, I've already tipped my hand on this one, but last year we averaged about 3 sacks per game. Will we do more or less sacks per game in 2016?
I think we're going to do less sacks per game. I think we're well set up for a rush defense, but I don't see a dominant pass rusher here yet. So I just don't know that they get there.
Yeah, and again, new staff, new scheme. So maybe we'll be wrong. Maybe the scheme will make up for maybe not having an elite pass rusher like BYU's had last year. And then, of course, when Vannoy and Ziggy were on the team as well, they had a couple more. So I don't know that we have anybody who approaches those three on this roster right now. Would you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
So, wow, we've agreed on everything so far. All right, so Matt, last one. Interceptions per game. Last year, BYU averaged 1.15 interceptions per game, their highest mark since 2009. Matt, better or worse?
I'm going to go better.
I'm actually going to go worse on this one.
And I'm only picking better because I knew you were going to go worse.
But I don't think a lot worse. I think it'll be close.
I think it is pretty close. But I think it's only better because I believe that Nacua is going to have more interceptions in 2016 than he had before.
Okay, that's a good thought. I just think the lack of the pass rush, you know, you can only cover guys for so long, even if you're good. You know, you're going to see, and interceptions very often happen on a quarterback rushing a throw, right? And I just don't know that there would be a lot of those opportunities. The wild card is what you said. I think with Hanneman and Nacua playing back there, those are two really athletic guys that could make some interceptions where the quarterback afterwards thinks, I you got to make that throw, but yet he still picked it off, you know?
Right.
So it wouldn't shock me. Again, this wouldn't shock me if Nacua and Hanneman have fantastic years, then this number could be higher. So, Matt, what's the expectation for this defense? Last year, the defense was good, but not great. Certainly not as good as some of the best defenses that Bronco had coached. You know, when you factor in the schedule, though, the schedule was pretty tough and played some good offenses. But they struggled against the run against really good rush teams. Overall, Matt, is this going to be a team where we say, yeah, that's a top 40 defense, or do you think we're probably out of that still?
I think statistically, I don't believe that this team will be in that top 40 range just because of the schedule.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
But if I were to compare the two defenses against each other, and I think that this defense is an improvement, I think they're better. But the teams that some of these teams that they're going to be up against in some of these game situations are going to be extremely difficult. So I don't know that it's going to play out on the score sheet.
See, I think the defensive backs and linebackers will play better than last year. I think the linebacker core is more experienced. They're very athletic. I think the addition of Troy Warner and the ability, as we've talked about before, to move Hanneman to safety because of that addition will make a big difference. I think the defensive line, though, will not be as good. You've got Tuiloma. He's great. But you lost Kafusi, and there's nobody there who can, I think, even replace 75% of what Kafusi gave you. So I know there'll be more defensive linemen on the field. I just don't know yet that they've got the personnel in place to work that system the way they want it. They will eventually, and I might be wrong. Maybe some of these guys that we don't know very well because they just haven't played will end up, you know, stepping up, and this coaching staff will implement a system that they can operate. But, you know, UCLA, West Virginia, some of these teams, Michigan State, I think that defensive line is going to get beat up. I mean, that Michigan State O-line is consistently been pretty darn good for like a decade and a half. I think there's going to be a lot of abuse done to that defensive line this year.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And if you look at kind of the order that some of these games play out on the schedule, you know, you get beat up in one game and you come back and you're playing another team that could really do some damage statistically. So it's just just hard.
Yeah, I just think of that Michigan State, Mississippi State back to back.
Yeah, and I know the second one of those is in Provo, but still.
Yeah, if I'm talking about that D line, you're going to be playing, you know, a half dozen maybe NFL caliber offensive linemen in those two games, and they're 6 days apart. Big, strong, athletic offensive linemen. That's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough.
You know, and you look at, you know, and I don't want to get into a season preview here, but I kind of do.
But you
You look at games 2 through 4, right? The University of Utah, that's going to be a physical, you know, knockdown, drag out type game.
Yes.
And then you got UCLA the next week, which has got a pretty good offense and some talented offensive linemen. And then you got to go on the road to West Virginia the week after that. I mean, I think that's going to be a tough, it's going to be tough for a lot of the units on the team.
Yes.
But defensive line is a place where I think you see that. By September 24th, September 30th, I think those guys are starting to feel it.
And then they get Toledo, who's not a terrible team, and then Michigan State, Mississippi
on the
State,
road.
And Boise State.
Yeah, it doesn't let up.
Two of the three of those in that October time frame on the road. Yeah, that's going to be tough.
But this type of schedule is how you find out. You know, we've talked about this a little bit, but you know, in some of these big programs, the really good P5 programs, there's not a huge drop off between their ones and their twos, right?
Right.
And that's how they're able to go through this type of a gauntlet. So the question is, you know, do we have that? Are we there? I'm not sure that we are, but are we good enough? Are we good enough to get, you know, to get by on it, to get through on it? And that's what we're gonna have to see and find out.
So Matt, let's move on. We've previewed the defense. Let's spend the last few minutes here on conference expansion. Okay. This first topic,
expansion.
We've got two on the first piece of this. We've got two tweet bag questions.
Oh, tweet bag.
Wow, that was weak. We got to coordinate that better. Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. Asks, how, if at all, do you think the recent LGBT report will affect the Big 12 invite? And Eric, that's at Eric. He's more Eric-er than you. How will this issue...
Everybody's more Eric-er than me.
How is this issue at BYU today similar and different from the Wyoming 14 in 1969? Matt, let's start with this first, with Justin's. Is this going to affect BYU being invited to the Big 12?
I don't think BYU gets invited to the Big 12 or not over this issue. I think it's a conversation that's inevitable to take place. But I don't think that the Big 12 makes a decision based on this. I'm not even sure how much it factors into their calculus. But yeah. I'm not discounting the importance of the conversation around the issue. But I'm just saying I don't think that the Big 12 is going to make their decision on it.
No, I don't think so either. And you pointed out to me, and other people have done so on Twitter, that Baylor has very similar language on their student policies as BYU does. Now, I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be much of an issue at all. So that's all we'll say about that. Gordon Monson and Brad Rock, the two columnists of importance in the Salt Lake City market, both came out, of course, in favor of BYU joining the Big 12 and all that stuff. So Matt, the decision is supposed to come before football season, right? So we've got a couple more weeks of this painful process. Matt, the most recent reports seem to indicate, and this said in the last few days has sent BYU Twitter into a frenzy, that there seems to be some horse trading going on, and it's going to be Houston and Cincinnati, and that will be it. They'll stop at 12, not go to 14. Matt, what is your prediction at this point of how many teams get in, and is BYU one of them?
I think they eventually go with four additional teams. I think they take two teams in a first round, and then another two teams a year or two later, and maybe they announce all four now and phase them in. But I think eventually they're taking four more teams, and I think that the first round is BYU and the University of Houston, which blows my mind because I've always been on the boat of BYU is not going to get a P5 invite, everybody, so we just got to move on, right?
Yes,
and that's what I've always said until tonight. And the other thing I've always said is I don't understand why any Big 12 school, any Texas Big 12 school, is interested in having the University of Houston in the conference.
Well, it's easy.
Why you want to recruit against those guys is, I think, is insane.
Well, it's extremely easy, Matt. UT wants a campus in Houston, right?
Right.
Isn't it that?
Yes,
isn't it this simple?
They bought a whole bunch of land right there, and they want to put some stuff up. And
they need University of Houston's support in the state legislature to make it happen.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is, quite frankly, now I understand why everyone in the Big 12 dislikes the Longhorns, because I do too now. I honestly, this is crazy to me that a conference would make a decision based on the fact that one of their schools wants to build a campus somewhere.
No, but if you go back in history,
I know this
of,
is
of
how
this conference.
Yeah, yeah.
And who's been included and who hasn't been included as this conference has evolved, a lot of it has been around what the Texas state legislature wanted.
Yeah.
That's why Baylor is in the conference.
So I've got a good friend at work who's an Iowa State fan, and this was his exact quote to me last week. He said, "I am sick and tired of Oklahoma and Texas." And he's like, "If my football program didn't need them to survive, I would just want to play in a different conference."
You have to have him.
But he has to have him. Yeah, and he knows that. He's not an idiot. He gets it. But he's just tired of the fact that those two schools kind of dictate. You know, in the SEC, Big Ten, there isn't this balance of power. Yet people who are outside of Big Ten country will say, no, Ohio State and Michigan dominate. No, they don't. They do not. That is not how the Big Ten operates. It's not how the Pac-12 operates. It's not how the SEC operates. No Power 5 conference except for the Big 12, and maybe that's why they've been so dysfunctional, allows two schools to dictate the entire conversation. I mean, that's why, Matt, you say you think that's what's going to happen. My prediction is they add two teams and it's not BYU. But I think they eventually go to 14 teams and add BYU. But man, these people couldn't make a good decision to save their friggin' lives. I mean, this whole thing is a mess, right? We're not going to expand. We're not going to expand. Oh, wait a second. We hired a consultant. They told us we should go to 14. But now Fox and ESPN are telling us they don't want us to go to 14. You know what I mean? Like, it's a circus. I want to get off.
But, you know, and they've brought this on themselves by dragging it out and doing it all so publicly. And there's part of me that says, you know, maybe this is just a poorly calculated PR move, right? We're just trying to draw attention to what we're doing, try and raise the hype and those kinds of things. But I'm not prepared to give the conference at this point that much credit. And to be honest, and you've said this in the past, and I've seen some of this stuff on Twitter. At this point, I'm watching the Big 12 and the way this is factoring out. Do I really want into this?
You do, though, because there's no other option.
There's no other way to get into one of these P5 top conferences because BYU is not going in anywhere else.
Yeah, we've talked about it. The Pac-12 is never going to take BYU.
Nope.
The issue we talked about earlier is a piece of that. Big Ten might expand at some point. It's not going to be BYU, though.
Nope.
Though, of all of the conferences outside of the Big 12, I would say that is the quote unquote most likely. I just don't think it's likely at all. ACC and SEC are not going to include BYU. So you look at that together and go, this is kind of it. So yes, you want into this dysfunctional deal. But the problem is, you know, what happens if Texas bolts in 3 years or 4 years?
Well, see, I think the similarities here are scary. Just stick with me for just a second.
Okay.
The WAC wasn't working out for a couple of schools. So they left and they formed what was called the Mountain West Conference. Who were those schools? BYU and Utah.
Yes.
Right? And so BYU and Utah left to form the Mountain West Conference. And what did they form? So they formed this Mountain West Conference and they bring the good teams from the WAC and they come with them and they formed this because the WAC had gotten too big. You got to cut the fat and all this, right?
And they brought in a few programs like TCU, you know, and so added some teams and the best from the WAC. Yep.
And there was a lot that was dysfunctional in the Mountain West Conference. And we've joked a lot about Hare Thompson and the MCN network. Yeah, he's bad, right? Yeah. And he's still bad. And the Mountain Network, which was a total debacle and all this. But if you go back to some of the reasons that really drove people crazy about the Mountain and some of what caused the dysfunctionality there was the Mountain West Conference was trying to strike this balance between taking care of the two schools, two, maybe three schools, but let's just say two schools, two or three schools that were driving all the revenue and interest and not being mean to Wyoming, right?
Right.
And so when they catered to these top two or three schools, Wyoming and these other guys would get upset. And when they did things to try and level the playing field or spread the money around to these other smaller schools, the fan bases, at least at these larger schools, just couldn't deal with it. So eventually, what did that stress do? Is it destroyed the conference? The Pac-12 came knocking. Utah bolts. BYU is like, well, if Utah's not here, there's really no reason for us to stay. So BYU bolts, and what does the Mountain West really become at that point? You know what it is today, which is basically the WAC.
Well, let me.
Hold on one second. So you go to today's Big 12. That I believe that same scenario is what we're watching play out. And there's this delicate balance between what Texas and Oklahoma want and what everybody else wants. And you can only keep both of those ends of the spectrum happy for so long before it falls apart.
Before something snaps. I don't disagree with you. I do think, though, I would tell a slightly different narrative of the Mountain West. It's really simple. The Pac-12 came and asked Utah. And Utah made the no-brainer decision to accept the invite. They didn't leave because they were frustrated with the Mountain West. They would have stayed in the Mountain West had they had no other option. They left because Oklahoma and Texas decided not to take the invitations, and the Pac-12 turned around to their backup plan. And if you're Utah, you make that decision.
Did it take five seconds? Yes.
Like, they called up on the phone and
If it took 5 seconds, you should be fired.
Is Chris Hill, like, is he saying yes before they finished their statement?
You know, right, but why did the Pac-12 call Utah?
Because they Texas had a good football program.
Because Texas turned them down.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
And at the time, Texas had a better option. They were happy in the Big 12. But when the Pac-12 or the SEC come knocking again, and as that stress continues, and if Texas bolts, you're done.
But here's the thing. If you're the Big 12 and you don't force Texas – if Texas is going to force Houston into the conference and you don't put some massive penalties on Texas leaving the conference and take away the Longhorn Network, then you didn't do your job. Because if you're going to cave to them and let them force a team into the conference, which is fine. I'm not actually against Houston joining the Big 12. I don't really care.
It's not a terrible choice. They've recently been good.
Yeah, and I don't really – honestly, I don't really care. I just want BYU to get in. That's all I care about.
And beyond BYU, the rest of the schools are pretty much the same.
Yeah. To me,
except UConn, for maybe Boise State. But
UConn, Cincinnati, Houston.
Central Florida.
You know, to me, they're the same. I mean, they're not really. There's differences between them, but they're the same. And then you have this other tier of schools. Why I'm not even sure why we're talking about Colorado State or New Mexico. I saw bandied around. Like, come on, guys. This isn't like these are stadiums that seat like 30,000 people. Like, stop. You know, they don't belong in the Big 12, and they won't add anything to the conference at football. And you can make arguments in other sports, maybe. But you look around and go, I don't know what those other schools offer. The end to me, Matt, is this. If the Big 12 makes this decision based on the athletic success and money, BYU is the number one choice and it's not close. And that's not a BYU homer. As I said before, you know, Utah was a good candidate to be pulled in the Pac-12. I had no problem with the Pac-12. It annoyed me on a personal level, but not on an intellectual level. In this case, if they don't do this, this is going to not just tick me off, but it's not going to be about football or sports. Because if it's about football or sports, you just BYU's they should already be in the Power Five conferences. The Associated Press recently ranked the top 100 teams in the history of college football based on their rankings, and we're 34th ever. Higher than Utah. I know they've had more recent success, but this was over the 100 years of the poll. I mean, every number says BYU should be in a Power 5 conference. The size of our stadiums, the revenue we generate, the TV ratings we get, everything screams Power 5. We're better than at least half of the teams already in the Power 5 conference on all of these measures. So that's the thing that's going to tick me off. It's just like in the 80s and early 90s when we got passed over. If we get passed over, it'll be for non-football reasons. It'll be political reasons of different shades and varieties. And that'll annoy me. So
yeah, anyway. but that's just the nature of how things work, right? You know, yeah. and in the Pac-12, it culturally, it's just not a good fit.
Oh, stop it! Arizona State culturally fits with whom? It's the biggest party school in the country. Like, what do they have in common with Stanford?
They all like to party.
I mean,
you know, people who went to Stanford. Come on now.
Now here's the thing: everyone says that it's Cal. You're talking about Cal and Stanford. Culturally, BYU fits in with every other school in the Pac-12, right? Is there any other school that we don't fit in with? I mean, Oregon State, it's like an ag school. Their fans and people probably have more in common with BYU than they certainly have with Stanford, right? I mean, I know we're never going to be in the Pac-12, but culturally, we'd be fine. There's always a couple of schools that are a little snooty. Is snooty a word?
Snooty is a word.
I think snooty is a word.
And it's probably the right word.
And Stanford is probably the snootiest
of
all the
snooty
schools in Division I college football. Well, Matt,
I think Stanford, by the way, sent more students to the Olympics than any other school. I think that's correct.
Ugh. You just made me sick to my stomach.
I think they had the most.
I know. I think like,
and I think Cal was up there.
I know. You just made me sick again.
Yeah.
San Diego State didn't, though.
No.
Yeah, stick it. Stick it, San Diego State.
Definitely not San Diego State.
Yeah, anyway. All right, Matt. Well, that's it for conference expansion. Next week, Matt, we will be back, hopefully not talking about conference expansions.
I hope we are talking about it. I hope we're talking about it because an invite came.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. But otherwise, if it's still just, silence, we're going to stay out of it unless there's actual news next week.
There you go.
We will preview the running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. We'll get more in on the tight ends than we did this week. We're also going to talk about the Olympics, Matt. We will go back and answer Justin's question about, he asked us about drafting the best and worst Olympic events. So we'll each get to pick our two favorites and our two least favorites of the Olympic events. Spoiler warning, one of mine might be rugby sevens now. Watched a lot of rugby sevens. It's a fun, have you watched it?
I have a job. So the ones that show up in the
day.
Whoa. No good.
Whoa, Slick. I have a job too.
I'm just messing with you. I'm messing with you. Come on. You're home with the baby. You're working from home, whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm just giving you a hard time. But I've not watched any of the rugby sevens.
Yeah.
I have watched a lot of swimming. I've watched a lot of women's gymnastics.
Also,
I've watched a lot of volleyball.
Also great.
Maybe I should stop talking because I'm giving away my draft here. But
no, you're not really giving away your draft. I have a daughter that's become obsessed with the archery. She's been watching that on demand.
Wow.
Yeah.
You got to get her out there. Get her out there. Get a
that's
bow.
What she wants to do. She wants to get a bow. She wants to
that's
try
awesome
it out. She wants to be Merida. I'll be shooting for my own hand.
You know, you need to go to one of these. They've got this website. I think it's an NBC website where it shows you how you can get involved in some of these sports.
Yes, yes.
And like the local groups near you. I think you didn't you do curling or something a couple years ago?
Curling. Curling is fun.
Curling is like going to the bowling alley where you live, isn't it?
Yeah. There was a curling club near my house in Wisconsin when I lived in Wisconsin. No joke. I never joined, but I did go there a couple of times for fun.
A country club for like weird people?
you wanted to say backwater Wisconsin hicks? Is that what you're trying to say?
That's not what I said.
I would say it is a. I wouldn't say that it's a refined taste, but I would say that it crosses socioeconomic boundaries in a way that I did not think it would.
That's interesting.
It was a mixture of people. You had guys there that were kind of biker Harley guys, and then you had some executive types. So it was an interesting dichotomy there.
Way to go curling. Way to break down barriers.
Why do we break down barriers curling? And it was mostly Canadians, by the way. Canadians.
Shocker.
Yeah, that was a shocker. The other sport this week that I have enjoyed a little bit, and see, we're getting into the Olympics, even though we weren't going to get into
the Olympics. Can you help it? The Olympics are awesome.
The Olympics are so awesome. I love watching the Olympics. I've watched a lot. It's a good time to have a baby the week the Olympics open, actually.
Yes, that was very well timed. Yeah. I loved how many times the Olympics came up in testimony meeting in my ward last week.
Oh, good golly.
Oh, it's unbelievable. What's crazy to me is you look on Twitter, and I'll let you finish what you were saying a second ago, but if you look on Twitter and Facebook, it's the first few days of the Olympics, it's like I found out that everybody I know feels that they have like an above average and special affinity for the Olympics. Yes, and then they realize that, oh no, everybody likes it this much. And that's okay, everybody. That's cool. That doesn't diminish your love for watching somebody who's the best in the world at what they do, right?
But Matt, I do have an above average love and affinity for the Olympics.
I'm sure you do. You're very special. But who doesn't want to watch somebody who's, and in some of these cases, the best ever? Can you imagine being the best ever at doing something? Like, I mean, I can because I am.
We both can. We've been the best ever BYU sports podcasters ever. Yeah. But, yeah, take that, just, Cougar Center.
I just love watching people who've put in this type of, the type of effort that these things require, performing at their best. You know what I mean? It's just fun to see.
And, you know, what I was going to tell you, what the story I was going to say was, I was when Michael Phelps announced, what was it, a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, that he was coming back, I thought, dude, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, it's not going to work out. That's why Michael Phelps shouldn't listen to me.
Nobody should listen to you.
Whoa. A bunch of people listen to me every week, you jerk.
I'm messing with you. But aren't you glad he came back?
Yes, he's I'm totally glad. I'm totally glad. And I don't know if you watched tonight. We're recording on Tuesday night when winning the butterfly. And he basically, the South African guy, Laclos, tried to psych him out. Laclos didn't medal.
Nope.
And Michael Phelps got the gold. So don't try to psych out Michael Phelps.
Wag. He did the finger wag. It was I think he was just throwing up the number one, but it kind of felt like the finger wag that, what's her name? Lily. Drawing a blank on her name. But when she threw the finger wag at the Russian swimmer, that was awesome.
Oh, well, when she, did you see the interview afterwards where she's like, well, I'm not a drug cheat. So I'm like,
She kind of, got cut. She got caught doping, and I'm not a real big fan of that.
Yeah. I was like,
awesome.
Don't pull any punches.
Awesome.
Don't pull any punches. Anyway, well, we will be back next week. More Olympics, I promise. We'll open with that next week. We'll spend a good time on that. Check us out on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Check us out, of course, on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!